did me wrong, and I grew strong, and I learned how to get along. So now you're back from outer space. I just walked in to find you here with that sad look upon your face. I should have changed that stupid lock. I should have made you leave your key. If I'd have known for just 1 second.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth, and we are going to talk about some serious stuff today with Helen Strike. She is the president of the River Falls Hospital and Regina Hospital in Hastings, and we are joined also by Dr. Melody McKenzie. She's the primary care clinic lead physician, and she is also the director of medical affairs at Regina, and we're thrilled that both of you are calling in today. How have you both been?
Well, I think we're both trying to do our very best to keep ourselves and our families healthy.
How about you, Dr. Melody? You the same thing?
Yeah, I think there's not much to do besides stay home and work and keep healthy right now.
Well, and that's got to be really tough for you because we're seeing the numbers tick up everywhere. Both of you are certainly at more risk if you even go to work. Let's talk about the guidelines that all of us maybe that have to go to work. What would you recommend we continue to do?
The guidelines haven't really changed a lot. We're still here at our clinic, just like elsewhere. We're encouraging everyone who comes into our clinic to mask. People who come and see us will notice that not only do we mask, but we wear some kind of eye protection, so either goggles or a face shield, and that's throughout Alina, anyone who's in patient contact, but even around each other. We still maintain our 6 feet or more of distance, even with each other, because we can all have the disease, or the virus. We don't assume that it's just our patients. So I think we spend as much time making sure that we're safe from each other, which sounds really weird, but we have to make sure we're safe from each other, and then the patients are protected, and then we are protected from the patients. So it's all one big effort to keep everyone safe.
So Helen, you deal with both Wisconsin and Minnesota. What are the differences that you're seeing, and how do you keep it all straight?
Well, there's differences in the way each of the states got plans around things like PPE and bed capacity and staffing, as well as the new vaccine programs that are coming out. So you've got to keep a Wisconsin side and a Minnesota side when working at the two hospitals. But both states have done a really nice job in communication and trying to make sure that we all know where we are every day and how many cases there are, how many hospitalizations, and how many deaths. So that's been very helpful in our planning and in our day-to-day operations.
You know, I know a lot of people are very disappointed that the new mandates came out from the governor of Minnesota, but right before Thanksgiving in regards to gatherings and such. Please give people a little bit of background of what that's based on.
As a healthcare administrator and Melody as a provider, for me, in my opinion, these mandates came a little bit too late. We've already seen a tremendous amount of spread of high numbers of community spread cases. It would have been nice if we'd had a bit of action a couple of weeks ago, because we're seeing in Minnesota and Wisconsin, of course, which is struggling to get any kind of public health actions in place, we're seeing very, very high hospital capacities and intensive care bed shortages in both states. So as far as a hospital administrator and someone who works with the state around bed capacity, this is the best thing that we could have asked for, and we look forward to it making a difference in a couple of weeks. It takes about 2 weeks for these new mandates to make a difference, really, in any of the testing numbers that we have, and then it takes about another week or so before it makes a difference in hospitalization. So we are really looking forward to seeing those numbers decrease so that we can hopefully have a better Christmas than we are at Thanksgiving.
Well, let's talk about that, because the mandates are only as good as the people that are going to be following them. So what should Thanksgiving look like for us?
Well, the Minnesota Hospital Association released yesterday and today some pretty serious information out on social media and television about what we need to expect of ourselves and each other over Thanksgiving. Staying in your small family unit, trying not to travel, because whenever you're traveling, you're always exposed to more folks, and really making sure that this time we wash our hands, we wear our masks, even inside, and that we have good social distancing, because it has been proven over and over again in many countries around the world that it's these social events that are causing spread.
Well, and I think that's the hard part. I think Helen and I see the side of it that people don't see. So Helen spends evenings and sometimes weekends working at an access center trying to find beds when someone's in an emergency room and there's no bed. So we have to find them within Alina or within the state. And this is happening. We're struggling at times to find beds for people, and people are sitting in emergency rooms for hours and hours at a time sometimes, not always, but at times because there isn't a bed. So Helen has this big global view of the state. Locally in the clinic, we can tell you that we are seeing more and more patients, and our patients who get tested within Alina, we get results and telling us they're positive, and we all get numerous ones every day of our own patients, and those are only the ones that are tested with Alina. We spend the day going through messages and calling patients who are at home, who are day 6, day 7. One of my patients today, day 8, with a fever of 103, wondering if she needs to go in and get oxygen. You know, we see it, so we've really seen the difference. I know March and April, we were worried, we planned, it kind of fizzled a little bit, but now we're seeing exactly what we thought might happen in April. We're seeing lots of sick patients. And then there's always the other ones, and it's hard when people say, well, I got it, and I just got a sore throat, and it wasn't a big deal. Yeah, it's hard for them. It's hard when they want to go to the gym, and it's hard when they want to go to a wedding. My mother had a big birthday party this weekend in Canada, and she was all by herself with my dad because that's the restrictions, and I want my family to be safe. So it's hard. It's very hard, but we want everyone to come through this. We want as few people to get in the hospital and as few people to die as we can so that next year, and we say that, next year we can have those people with us and we can celebrate Thanksgiving with those people. We don't want to celebrate and then also talk about the loss we've had. And it's hard.
You know, I think a lot of people are just getting antsy. And is that how this is spreading? They're thinking, oh, this might, just getting together with this person might be okay, or going to, you know, this gathering might be okay, or having these people over might be okay. We just can't do that, can we?
It's even harder now because the numbers locally are way more than they were in March and April, when probably a lot of us were doing a lot more. We were being more careful. We weren't going out. We were being paranoid, and we were wiping the groceries down, some people. We know we don't need to do that, but we actually really have to think about every time we're in contact with someone, what exposure do we have? Because again, sometimes they don't know they have it. Some people find out the next day that they were exposed a week before, and then they get tested the next day and have symptoms, but they might have been shedding the virus. So it's really hard because we don't, it's not like you get symptoms first and then you're shedding the virus. And then, you know, sometimes people are spreading it around and younger people don't have any symptoms and they're shedding the virus. So it's really hard. It's really hard for people to know. But now is the time where we have to be more paranoid than we were in March and April, because there's much more, even in Hastings. There's lots of it in Hastings.
I think that's important to say out loud, because I still think that there are people that don't think this is serious.
You know, Mo, in the last week, we've had between 6 and 10 COVID-positive patients in the hospital every day at Regina. Not all our patients are going into United or up into the Metro hospitals. We are caring for COVID-positive patients every day in our emergency room and in our inpatient units now. And that wasn't the case even 4 or 5 months ago. We were seeing very few patients with COVID who were needing hospitalization at Regina. So this is real. This is here in Hastings. And I know that our caregivers at Regina, at the clinic, and at our hospital really are counting on all of our friends and neighbors, people in our city, to truly try to help us to flatten the curve, because we're exhausted.
Helen, you mentioned that there is a critical need for hospital beds. I know that we heard on the state news a couple weeks ago, maybe, that a lot of nurses have been furloughed. Can you speak to that, please?
The majority, well, specifically at Alina Health, we don't have any nurses furloughed on short-term furloughs anymore. There was a period of time, I think, across all the health systems where we were looking at what were sustainable programs and what were sustainable hospitals across Minnesota. Most of that work has happened, and there may have been some layoffs. Alina, we were very fortunate to not reduce any big programs or plans that meant a lot of people were laid off. But today we don't have any nurses or any frontline caregivers on any furloughs. We also, if anybody's been on our AlinaHealth.org website lately, will see that We actually have many, like hundreds of nursing and nursing team job ads out there on our website. So we are hiring like crazy.
Well, that's really great to hear as well. Tell us again the symptoms. Again, people might think, oh, I feel fine, except I have this one little thing, and that could be what is the first symptom of COVID.
We see a variety. It's really interesting. Again, we have patients who have no symptoms, so that's the extreme. And then we have some patients who initially just have fatigue. So we hear that, fatigue, body aches. Some people start with a fever. Some people start with a sore throat, runny nose, diarrhea. Some people can show up with abdominal pain. There's been patients who show up in the emergency room thinking they have kidney stones, and it's because COVID's in their lung and they're having symptoms from that, and they don't have any symptoms. So again, that's why it's hard. It's not like one of these things where you have a fever of 103 and your throat is always sore. So it's hard to contain without widespread testing. So Dakota County, you can call and get a saliva test sent to your home. It's not for immediate. It's they're trying to decrease, you know, the amount of people walking around without it. There's also testing stations within the cities where people can go who just want to know. It's good for containment. It's not good so you can go see your grandmother or go visit your grandkids, because you could test negative today and still be positive tomorrow. But it's a good way to try and find those people who are walking around and don't have symptoms, get them out of the community so they don't continue to spread it.
I'm curious to know if you could answer some questions. I know quite a few people that actually have contracted COVID. They're feeling better now, but the question is, are they immune from getting it again?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? We know, so we don't know. We know there's some studies that suggest that immunity might be on average 4 to 6 months. There's been some case reports of people getting fairly significant COVID who have been reinfected within that time. So we don't really know. We don't think it'll be a once and done like chickenpox. We think it'll be a waning immunity, but we don't know enough about it. But we know that, you know, people who have had it that are having antibody tests done, some of them are still having antibodies at 4 and 6 months, but not everyone.
What will this new vaccination that's in developments, what will it do and be able to do? And what are you hearing of when it could come, and will you be involved in administering it?
So Alina has said that we probably won't be. There might be people, employees that volunteer to help out, but this is something that's going to be a public health statewide, and Helen can probably talk more to some of the planning that she knows of. But locally, it probably won't be through the Alina Clinic. Healthcare providers that are high risk, like the hospitalists and the patient, the nurses working in ICU in the emergency room, will probably be the first ones to get vaccinated when we can. But that will be the first line, and it's all of the ones that we know of so far are a series of two vaccines, so it's going to take some time. Helen, you can probably talk about the state plan. Do you know more about that?
I think you're right on, Melody. We're all actually waiting because we're not sure which vaccine is going to get early approval and how much there is going to be of it. We're hearing that the state may get a few thousand of them for the first line of defense, and the decisions are being made now about our long-term care patients and staff, as well as our critical care staff at the hospitals. But our real hope is to have a fantastic program once we have 3, 4, or 5 vaccines been approved and having similar ways at which they're being delivered, so that we can get all our planning that people are working on at every part of the state to make sure that we get the vaccines out as quickly as we can when they're available.
I have some questions about the Minnesota mandate, please. Explain why it's okay to go to Walmart and the salon, but not go to a health club or different things like that. And do you have any health data to better explain this to people?
My opinions about Walmart or a grocery store and actually retail stores, because they've left those open this time for now, are that over time we've seen very little spread, that the Department of Health of Minnesota has contract traced back to those big stores and those small stores. Gyms are interesting in particular. There have been some outbreaks that have been localized to a gym, but not as many as one might think. But gyms, you know, there's a lot of aerosolization of coughing and sneezing that can occur, as well as just the how you exercise. And so I think there's a concern just epidemiologically about gyms. I think we all would say everybody's trying to make the best decisions they can about what stays open and what closes, and we're grateful a little more stayed open this time than what happened in the spring.
Melody, I know that you have kids, and Helen, you have two adults. What would you do if you had teens?
So I have a lot of teens in my office, and I have a lot of parents either with them or parents that come in for other reasons, and we talk about this because mental health is such an integral part of all of this. You know, we're human beings, we're social beings, and every time we do these things, there's consequences. So obviously there's consequences for, especially for teens, because they're the most social group, mm-hmm. of telling them they can't be around others. You have to find some balance, and everyone is different, obviously. In the perfect world, we would say that they can't be with each other at all. That would be the perfect answer if we want to get the numbers down as fast as we can to open up the schools, to open up the gyms. We can't have them hanging out with each other, especially in large groups. Reality is, for their sanity and for their mental health, what I tell them is have a bubble. And again, it has to be a clean bubble. One or two friends. But then it means that those one and two friends aren't hanging out with one or two other friends. So the best thing would be the best friend. If you have a best friend and you two are joined at the hip and you do everything together, yeah, that's part of your bubble. But if they're at home and their parents are out with other people, again, that becomes your bubble. So every time there's another person in there, it gets bigger and bigger. The less face-to-face contact obviously is the safest. Any way that they can be on their, talk to their friends, TikTok, FaceTime, whatever, is obviously safer. But I think we have to try and think of how do we help with their mental health. And so I'm trying to tell them, find a best friend, and ideally a best buddy is the best system to do.
And what about activities outside? I've been asked if our kids could go for a walk with one of their best friends outside. Could they go snowboarding?
Again, everything increases your risks, but outside is obviously the safest. I go for walks right now by myself. If I was going with a friend, I'd probably walk 5-6 feet apart. When I'm walking towards other people, I give them birth because, again, they're breathing. And so if it's a friend that they are not a high-risk person, yeah, I think that's safe. But if they're going to be three or four of them wrestling down the street and they're all going with different groups, again, that's just how this thing is spread.
The best part, Mo, is that there's a light at the end of the tunnel that we didn't have last year, earlier in the year. The idea that we'll have so many more people vaccinated by the middle to end of next year is just a wonderful thought of hope.
You know what, it really is, and let's end our conversation on that. I really am so grateful because you give such hope and you also give such great information for us. We're just trying to weed through this, and I think it's really nice to talk to the professionals about it. Helen Strike, she's the president of the River Falls Hospital and Regina Hospital in Hastings, and Dr. Melody McKenzie, she's a primary care clinic lead physician. She's also the director of medical affairs at Regina. Thank you both so much, and you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.